And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Karen Dahlman is an author, licensed counselor, spirit communicator. She provides spiritual readings for her clients and also serves as an officer and director of the Talking Board Historical Society. Born with the gifts of clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, Karen communicates with sentient beings in the unseen dimensions and uses these gifts with her clients. Her work's mission is pushing the boundaries of consciousness, and her message is to assist humanity in awakening to its greatest potential. We'll be talking about her latest book, When Cats Had Wings, in a moment, on animal communications. Karen, welcome back.
Good morning, George. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And how about yourself?
Oh, doing great. It's so wonderful to be back with you. I guess it's been 10 years we've been doing this, talking about channeling and Ouija.
Well, 10 years ago, you came out with a book called The Spirits of Ouija.
That's right. That's right. And I'm super excited to be talking about channeling and many ways and how to channel the consciousness of sentient beings.
You're still an advocate of using that board, though, aren't you?
Well, I am, only because it's a tool. And it's a tool. You take the tool away, you can still channel, but it's a tool for channeling. So, yeah, I am.
Are you convinced that demons could still come through if it's done the wrong way?
This is what I'm convinced of. And this, in my opinion, is that if you want to bring through something negative, you can, but it has nothing to do with the board. It has to do with yourself. So if you have the fears and you're doing some, you know, different things, trying to work with the energies, yeah, if your belief system could bring them in for you, absolutely. But not necessarily because of the board. It's because of yourself.
Before I knew you, we were going to be doing a show on Ouija boards with three separate guests.
Uh-huh.
And it was going to be with the experiment with the board and all that. Two of the guests backed out. The other one said, yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. And I decided just to cancel that portion of the show. And I had some irate emails from people who were having pizza parties with their Ouija boards and stuff like that. But I basically backed down because I didn't want anybody to be offended by the Ouija board. But like you say, it's more of the individual than the board, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's just cardboard, it's wood, and I have a glass board, and people have metal boards. That's just a tool. It's ourselves. We're doing all the work. And as we talk this evening about our topic tonight, you're going to hear about how it really is ourselves because, George, a lot of my work, if not most of it now, is off the board, yet I'm still getting amazing messages in other ways.
How did you get involved in the Ouija board?
Well, the Ouija board, see, when I was born, I had these abilities. I didn't quite understand what they were until I got a lot older and could put them into a context. But I had an imaginary playmate, and he wasn't imaginary, but I could see him and other people couldn't. And I learned that I had something, that ability to see into other dimensions. And a lot of people listening in your audience have something similar, like some weird experiences like that, or imaginary playmate. Well, my mom told me when I was younger to go to school, I can't tell people I'm talking to somebody who's not there. Now, she wouldn't understand that this being was there, but when I was introduced to the Ouija board, I was able to make that, it was like my lifeline, to make that connection back to the unseen dimension now in very tangible ways as the planchette moved. So it just became an extension of my own abilities and gifts to see things and to channel energies. It just became another way to do it in a practical or a visual, tangible way that people could experience it with me.
Did you get better and better with it as the years went by?
Absolutely. I mean, this is to do anything good with you know, any you take up a new sport or take up a, you know, playing an instrument, it really requires a lot of practice. People ask me all the time, they say, I want to channel, I want to use the board. And I say, well, you know, be ready for a lot of, I call it the three P's, practice, patience, perseverance. It takes a lot of time to do anything well. And so, yes, for me, I was an avid user of the board for channeling because that's what I thought I needed to do. I didn't realize I could just get rid of the board and do this. But it became better and better. I mean, what I mean by that is I started meeting higher and higher beings of consciousness that were just spot on about things in my life and other people's lives. And I started offering readings in the 90s because of the information that was coming through. And it became better because I was working on myself, George. I was taking this seriously, raising my own vibration or frequency, and doing like meditation, grounding work, working with light energy. And the more I worked on myself internally, the better the channeling got. It wasn't getting a better board or how many boards I had or this is the only board that works. It was how much I worked on myself. I am truly the instrument of the channeling and what makes the board work. If the board becomes my display or theatrics to show tangibly what's happening, but it does require a lot of personal inner work to get this tool to work well. And that's what I did. So, yes, it's gotten better over the years.
Start with your definition, Karen, of channeling. What is that?
Well, you know, channeling is an interesting word. You hear it and you might get all of a sudden like mystical images in your mind, like, oh, you're channeling or a person that's deceased or you're channeling some spirit guide in the ethers. Well, channeling is very common. We do it pretty much every day. Whenever we get intuitive, like our gut feeling, some kind of idea or concept or inspiration, that's channeling. You could be channeling your higher self. You could be channeling your intuition. You could be channeling, you know, even your pets or your plants. I mean, you have an idea, they need something, and you respond to it without even consciously thinking about it. We are constantly channeling that inner self, our greater self, all the time. But in a mystical way, when we look at channeling, it's really more about tapping into things, energies that are outside of our personal awareness. And so that gets into channeling another individual energy separate from me. But here's the key. To channel, you have to work with the whole concept of consciousness and how we're all connected in this, I like to call it a pool or a matrix of energies that we tap into and allows us to reach another sentient being through the method of consciousness. We'll get into this a little bit more, but that's more the mystical channeling. But channeling is a very normal thing to do.
Is it easy to channel?
Well, it's very easy when you're like, you know, work with your intuition or something doesn't feel right, or you walk into a room, you could feel the tension. That's channeling the energies. So that's very easy. It's very natural. But when you start working with energies external to yourself, we get, I don't know how to do that. It does require, I always say, like flipping the switch or clicking into letting go. Letting go and allowing yourself to go almost right brain. I tell people when you channel, you've got to get more right brain creative and get out of your methodical, logical way of thinking that will stop you. You have to kind of go with the flow. So channeling is natural, but yet you've got to let go to go into it. And trust the process, because if you go, okay, I'm going to channel my pet, it's like, oh, I don't believe I can do that. Okay, that blocks it right there. That's the logical mind stepping in, left brain saying, this can't be done. It's got to be done this way, or A, B plus equals C. Where I'm saying it's more of a circular feeling. It's more spiraling into the energy. It's allowing the energy and trusting what you're getting and playing, having a playful mind about it, which allows you to get better and better at it. Now, can people channel right away? Some people can if you're channeling an external energy, but most people don't, because we're so logical and we're so pragmatic in our lives and so tangible with what we can see that it's hard to believe you could tap into some energy and maybe something you can't see, like extraterrestrials, interdimensionals, the mythological creatures, or even that your animal can communicate with you. That might be too far outside of somebody's awareness or somebody's belief. The whole key here is that you really got to have a belief system that's open to it and is at least curious about it to allow channeling to happen. And then once you're at that space, it does get easier and easier.
When you channel, do you channel to them or do they come to you?
Well, it's basically an idea of reaching and meeting somewhere in the middle in some cases. Other cases, I'm like dialing up a frequency, if you will, almost like the old phones. You dial up your rotary dial and you do a number and it reaches that person at the end of that number. Well, it's similar to that. the way I dial my frequencies is through my thoughts, through my intentions. I know I'm going to work with, let's say, some kind of, let's say, person in the afterlife or after they left this third dimension. I will dial into that person by how I know that person or by what the question is or how I'm trying to reach it. That becomes my intention, my pathway, my gateway to reach it. So it's like dialing up the energy, and that energy comes back and meets me if it's open to doing that. So it's a very, it's a very spiritual thing in many cases. But it's based upon intentions, and it's based upon my own vibration. So people say, well, how do you reach higher beings of frequency? Like some of the beings that I talk to, I call the guides. That was a progression. I worked through so many different levels of energies till I got to that level. But again, for me to dial them up and get that level, I had to do a lot of internal work on myself, which means letting go of judgment or fears, stepping outside of a box I was told that this is all that life is, that there's so much more to the unseen eye than we've ever been told. And once I begin to step into that and realize that's a possibility, that opened me up to more. So it's kind of a dance we must do with the unseen dimensions and mostly with ourselves. Again, any type of channeling that's happening, whether it's through a medium doing readings or a psychic or somebody reading cards, or even doing a pendulum or a Ouija board, talking board, it's like you've got to have the intentions and the beliefs that that tool can work, because you're the one that works the tool. The tools don't work without us there. It's us working the tool.
Now, who are the guides that you talk about?
Well, the guides is this group of ethereal beings. They've never been born in a body. The best way to explain it is it's source. It's source wisdom communicating back to us. And so it was a period of, it was about 1992 when I first met the guides. I started the board in 73. So we're talking almost 20 years, about 19 years when I finally met them. They were always here, as anybody could tap into the guides. It's not like they're exclusive to me. It's just a group of beings that knows they are an aspect of source, of God, of all that is. They said the only thing that separates us from you is that we never forgot who we are. You did. And so they don't need to be born in a physical body to go through this whole karmic wheel of life and death. Instead, they already know that they are source. And so they come here to teach us about our own divinity within. As your last guest was talking about consciousness, and he was saying the divine spark resides within everyone, and that's exactly what the guides are here to teach. But they are a collective group of beings. But let me tell you what, I can't see them. It's light. It's pure light in a frequency that our apparatus of our eyes is a part of a spectrum we cannot see. But I can feel them when I channel. That's the other thing about beautiful thing about channeling. When you're channeling, it's always positive. If you're channeling, if anything comes through negative, it's that's you getting in the way. That's fear stepping in. That's lower vibrational energies. But when you're channeling, as I'm talking about the guides, it's unconditional love will fill you up. And that, you know, that you're tapping into this incredible source of wisdom. And also, it reminds you of your own source of wisdom within.
When you are with the Ouija board, who are you tapping into? Are you tapping into guides?
Yeah, this is who I talk to now. It's called Just the Guides. They come through every session now, and that's been since 1992. Before that, I was working with all different levels of energies, whether it was the deceased transition people. They don't really like to be called deceased because they really are dead. They're not gone. They're still with us in just another form. So it started there. And then I got to tell you, George, I got to stress, especially to the audience, that this is a process of working on your inner self. The more you work on yourself, learning to ground, learning to use the light within, people call that protection, learning to work with the light energies, learning to feel empowered in your life. As a therapist, I took a lot of trainings. Everything I do with my clients, I did for myself. It just helped me become stronger and stronger in the ability to tap into these energies. But it was a progression. As I started then tapping into my higher self, which is really a part of me that's in me but outside of myself, that's when the world opened up to me. That was in 1989. And talking to my higher self allow me to reach other levels of consciousness, dialing up the frequencies that I talked about earlier, because I was willing to go further into the unseen dimensions. And so I started meeting the angelic realm. And then I started communicating with extraterrestrials. And then it went into the animal kingdom and so forth. I mean, it's just, it's off the charts now. But this is, it's a progression always and how you build up to these beings. But yet, the funny thing is, they talk with me, and I can hear them right now. They're saying, we're always with everybody here. Source is always with you, but you've got to be open to hearing it. People talk about praying, you know, to God. And this way, it's like I dial them up and I allow them to respond. I get to sit there and meditate and listen back. But I happen to do it with the tool sometimes of the board. I do it without the tool. I do it after meditation. I do it when I paint my artwork, when I write. It's tapping into that consciousness, that source, and bringing it through me, filling myself with unconditional love and feeling inspired by it all, where information just flows in. It downloads, just downloads in.
Seems like you use it for almost everything in your life.
Oh, channeling? Absolutely. Once I tapped into it, I realized, and I'm still learning to even use it in more profound ways, George. It's like I realized that channeling is such a natural thing. Oh, so one of the things I teach a lot about now is how to tap into your higher self. Then your higher self is nothing scary or woo-woo. It's really just the greater part of yourself that exists within our corporeal existence, but yet also exists in its divine existence. We're not separate from it. But once we learn to meet that part of ourselves, I mean, it's always with us, but oh, I should say hear and open to it and allow it, profound things can happen. This gets into the realm of manifestation or into the realm of creation or being inspired. You know, we're human. We're here to live on the earth and grounded and have our ups and downs in life. But what I find that makes it so sweet when you start bringing in the higher self is that you realize you can navigate the uncertainties or the hard times a lot more smoothly than you can when you're not tapped in. So I find if I want to help people in a grand way, it's really help them tap into their own inner wisdom, their higher self, and that is the spark of divine within.
Have you ever been tricked by a guide?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, if they're tricking me, they wouldn't be a guide. So this is where I think people fall into traps here, is that they tap into energy, and it usually is their own fears. And our fears, I got to tell you, what's within us, our thoughts, can influence us emotionally, physically, spiritually. I mean, science has shown that what we think is what we can create within our body. For stress, we start creating stressful issues as a response to it. So it's important to know that our fears can get the best of us, and we can also pull in lower energies. When you tap into the guides, or the angelic realm, or even animals, it's a very positive experience. It's highly motivating. It's very exciting. It's energizing. It's unconditional love flowing through you. It's the best way I can explain it. And if you don't have that feeling of it, this is really elevating my soul, then I wouldn't do it.
We're going to talk about animal communications when we come back after the break with Karen Dahlman and her latest book that came out just a few months ago called When Cats Had Wings. I've got to ask you, what do you mean by cats had wings, Karen?
Well, it's a wonderful story that one of my cats wrote, and I just put it to prose, but we can get into that. But he says it's a true story about cats. Now, the funniest thing about that is I did some research into it, and throughout antiquity, there's been mythological stories about cats with wings. This is before we wrote the story. George, this was not even on my radar. This is something that my cat came to me and wanted to write.
Your cat? So, your cat, Jack?
My cat, Jack.
All right, we'll talk about Jack the cat and animal communications when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie, along with Karen Dahlman. Karen, animal communications, how long have you been doing this?
Well, it started back in the mid-90s, early mid-90s. So as I was mentioning earlier, this progression of working with the guides and also the different levels of consciousness I've been able to communicate with, it was a progression. So after I started working with my higher self, I started working with higher realms. When I say higher, it's like a very light, high vibration. I can feel it when I'm channeling them. And then the animals eventually came through, but this is how it went. So I'm with my partner, we're using the board, and we were channeling my angel at the time, and she was giving us messages, and she said, you know what? You're not going to believe this. Now, this is all being spelled out on the board. And I said, okay, what? She goes, somebody wants to talk to you. And I go, well, a lot of people want to talk to me on this tool. She said, no, this is very different. I said, okay, bring it on. And so what happened was the planchet changed its direction, and it went a little slower, and it said, spelled out, Hermes cat, I love you. Now, I had a cat sitting right there, very much alive, and talking to me. And I said, wait a second, my cat's alive and talks to me on this tool? I said, well, you're channeling your cat. Yes, your cat wants you to know how much he loves you. And that was when I realized that you can use this tool to tap into consciousness of those who are alive or beings that are alive. And that's really when I started pushing the boundaries of consciousness even further than I had before. And that's when it starts. I've been doing animal communication for, gosh, about 30 years now.
Wow. Now, do you have to own an animal to communicate with one?
No, not at all. In fact, I've done some experiments where I communicate with some wild animals I might have crossed in my path. They don't always necessarily want to communicate. And when you start working with wild animals, what you get is usually an oversoul. It's like I would call it an oversoul. It's the kind of the consciousness of the species that will come through. Although some of the wild animals that I've crossed paths with will come through directly in their as themselves, as that individual. But a lot of times you can get this group consciousness that will come and be a spokesperson for that certain species. So you can talk to other animals. You can talk to, like I said, wild animals. But you know what? Where it works the best, George, really, when you have that connection with your own pet.
Sure.
I always say start there because that's the easiest way to start with your own pet. You already have a connection. You're already receiving information from them. Most of us don't even know that, but yet we're responding to them.
Is there a breed of animal that is a little easier or better than another breed? I mean, is a dog better than a cat or a cat better than a hamster?
Well, in my experience, I've had great results with people that are connected to their pets and me being connected to my pets. So it really depends on the person, the channeler.
And does it determine what the pet is, whether it's a dog, cat?
You mean when they talk to me, can I determine what it is?
I mean, what communicates better, an animal with a dog or a cat?
About the same when they have that connection with humans already.
Okay.
So I find that the ones that are in a relationship with humans, that could be horses, that could be dolphins, that could be animals that are around your environment, you know, turtles.
A bird?
Birds, absolutely. Yes.
Interesting. Can anyone communicate with an animal?
Well, people are already doing it. And they just say, yeah, I just adore my animal. I adore my dog. And I just know when my dog needs something, and it's more than just reading body language. You just feel it. So that's where channeling starts. That's a natural realm of channeling. We're constantly telepathically sending out messages to each other, and that includes the animals too, and we respond. In fact, I find that the animals are more open to the telepathic messages through channeling as opposed to even coming on the board, because that's an awkward, slow channeling when you can just read their messages in your mind and feel it. So I teach people how to start doing this work, and it starts very subtly, but you really need to sit down with one of your pets and be in their presence with no distractions, and maybe pet them or hold them and just allow whatever comes into your mind and respond to it. You just respond to it out loud or telepathically, but you'll start getting words or thoughts or images, and it just grows from there. But you got to trust the process. It is a process. But that's how channeling works.
What have you learned from animals that you've communicated with?
Well, let me say this. The animals are master teachers. The animals love us unconditionally. They come here to help us grow, help us learn, and especially learn about unconditional love. They are angels in disguise. In fact, Jack told me once, he said, because Jack had a really horrific past when I got him.
And Jack's the cat, right?
Jack's the cat, my co-author. And he said to me once, he said, you know, although I was broken by abuse, he said, you always saw me as an angel, as your angel. And it was true. But it's really a process of getting to be with your animal, letting your animal trust you. And if you have a pet, they're probably already trusting you, and taking time with them. Sometimes the animals think it's weird. They're like, why would you even want to channel me? You automatically respond to my needs. Especially people that have cats.
And Jack has passed on, right?
Well, Jack has passed on since 2019, but he started telling me he wanted to write a book in 2015. Gee, around that time.
I mean, how did he say this to you? Yo, Karen.
Well, George, you know, it's funny because it just sounds so funny saying it. But the thing is this. When I got him, like I said, he was so broken in spirit. He would sit in the corner for 10 months and just shake. He just went through some horrific abuse. And he really taught me patience. Here's the master teacher teaching me through his mishap. So he's scared. He was beaten and kicked. And when I brought him in, he would just sit there and shake. But I didn't give up on him. I was patient with him. I let him do his thing. And then he started coming through. I could channel him through the board. That's where he really started talking to me. And he started telling me some of his stories. But when he saw me write 3 books and I had them published, and he said, you know what? He came to me and says, I can write a book. I said, okay, what would you write about, Jack? He said, well, my story. And then one day, George, this is how this book started. I was sitting there on the floor petting him, because I always go to where he was. And I would just sit there with him on the floor and pet him. And he said, he goes, I have a story to tell you. And what I heard in my head was this, clear as a bell. This is what he said. He goes, cats are angels in furry disguise. Can I tell you the story when cats had wings? That phrase came into my head, and I went, what? Where does that come from? And Jack then said, that's the book I want to write. I was like, okay. So through a process of working with him, like telepathically, as that just happened, I realized he wanted to work that way, and also channeling through the board with spelled out messages, he started telling me a story. He wanted to tell me his abuse from the past. Then he started telling me a story about him wanting to play with kids and not being able to go outside. And then this story emerged. He had 3 versions of the story, and every time the story got a little better, it wasn't so dark. Because the story that he first told me was all the abuse he suffered. And then he worked through it, and it took a process of years. But he kept telling me, he says, I'm not going to write the whole thing. I need your help. He said, I'm going to be your writing coach. I was like, what?
Now, this abuse was abuse that happened way before you had him, right?
Oh,
obviously.
God. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, obviously. Yes. Years before I got him. I got him when he was the age of 3. But he went to a home that was just very abusive. I don't need to go into details, but it wasn't good.
I get it.
And his half-brother was there, too. And so I'm thinking I'm going to rescue them, which I did. I brought him home. They came to my home.
Both of them?
But both of them. Yes, both of them. And they were both at work. They were work. They were a big piece. They were definitely work. Let's just say that there was a lot of work I had to put into them. But I'm appreciative to have that opportunity, because through that process, like, Jack really taught me about patience, and he taught me about unconditional love. No matter what shows up, you can love something unconditionally. And Panzer is right along there too. But Jack was the one that was the most abused when I got him. So it's a beautiful story. And we always say, George, oh, I'm going to go rescue an animal. I'm going to go rescue him. Well, we do. We help them out. We take them out of bad situations. We feed them. We take them out of no-kill shelters or off the streets or whatever. And it's a mutual thing. But they will give of themselves. So they'll give you so much love in return for that, to teach us lessons in life. It's just it's a beautiful, beautiful relationship. And that's what evolved into the story When Cats Have Wings.
I'm going to describe the cover, and you'll tell us about the illustrator, Maz Farzan. Mm-hmm. When Cats Had Wings, and it's an illustration of 5 cats floating over land and clouds, and they all have wings and halos, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of angelic, as you said.
Yeah, so the basically the story is an illustrated story. It's beautifully illustrated. I didn't do the work. I hired an illustrator that I thought really could convey the message that Jack was giving me, and also the way I wrote the story. So it's an illustrated story.
It's a small book. It's not big.
Yeah, it's a children's book, but it's really for the young at heart. So mostly my clients are adults that buy this book because of the story. I'm telling you, anybody out there, you read it, you're going to cry. Just be prepared. Get the Kleenex out. And it's not because it's a sad story, because it's a touching story. It's so much about the unconditional love that we share with animals. In this case, Jack wanted to be the main character who's telling this story. It's told from Jack's point of view, and he talks about the power of unconditional love that is shared between the feline race and humanity. And it's just, George, this is his story. He told me this story. And then here's the magical thing, if this isn't magical enough, here's a magical thing that happened. So before I finally figured out what story we're going to write, because Jack's like, I told you several stories. Let's pick the best one. I need you to help me write it. I said, Jack, do I write it in like a story format? Do I write it in poetry? He goes, you're going to know. So I was talking to Jack one night, and I was channeling them on and off the board. And I went to bed, and I woke up in the morning with this phrase going through my mind. And the phrase was this: not too long ago, but within your distant past, lived a hierarchy of angels known as the winged kitty cats. I went, bingo, Jack. He had presented it to me in a dream. I woke up with it, and after that, I channeled it. The story flowed out of me based on what he's already told me, and the prose, the poetic prose, flowed out of me within like an hour, hour and a half. It was amazing. And then that's when I tightened it up and worked on with an illustrator to capture the visual images that Jack was providing me.
This was a story about Jack as an angel, right?
Correct. Yes. Yes, Jack's an angel. And he talked about how all the cats are angels and how they're angelic because they really watch over us. They really help us. As I said, they are our master teachers. They are our guides. And they're here in form, in physical form, alive. See, this is the key to the story, is that we are all each other's angels from time to time, regardless of what species you are. I mean, I know people that, you know, they may have birds or fish or turtles or horses or snakes, reptiles, and they feel like that's their love. They love that animal so much because that animal's teaching them to reach into the depths of themselves and express it. People are a little harder to always have unconditional love. You know, we have our emotions and we're up and down. Where when we're with an animal, we can just almost just allow it to come out of ourselves. And that's the beauty of this story. It talks about how the storyline goes where these angelic cats love humanity so much, they're willing to leave their beautiful habitat in the heavens and join us on Earth.
What are we tapping into with our pets when we communicate with them? Because a lot of people, like you mentioned, who own dogs or cats are into this stuff.
Yeah, because they open up that part of ourselves that can care, that can love, that can be free. Reckless abandon. They can be free to be themselves with their animals. There's no love like that. I mean, yes, we have love for our spouse and our children and our friends, and that's beautiful too. But the animal opens up something playful, innocent, young within us. They're funny. They're fun. They make us laugh. They can be hard to work with in terms of like Jack. Jack was very difficult. I had to get beyond my ego saying, oh, I want this cat to sit on my lap. No, that was up to him what he was going to do. But 10 months later, he did get up on my lap. But it took a while for that to happen. But it allowed me to open up to this experience of loving something so much that it transforms the relationship. And that's what animals do. They transform our relationships with ourselves and with the animal itself. It makes us into better human beings because they teach us to do that.
Does the animal sometimes channel a human?
Well, that's an interesting thought. So Jack, who said, I'm going to be your writing coach. So when I think in a sense, when he gave me this story, and I was never thinking about writing.
Now, did he give you this story after he passed or before?
He gave it to me in tidbits over a period of about 7 years.
And then he passed.
Tidbits. And then he gave it to me when he was very much alive. And then he gave it to me. At the end of it was when he already transitioned, and that's when the poem part started flowing out of me. So in that sense, he kind of channeled me. He kind of put the channeling into me through that dream. So so in a way, me talking about it right now is me being his voice. So in a way, I guess he's channeling through me.
You miss him?
Yes, of course I miss him. But, you know, I've had many cats. I have two right now. And I do miss him. I'll tell you why I miss Jack a lot, because he was just so dear, so broken, but yet so strong. The strength of that cat is amazing. And, you know, the interesting thing, too, is I always felt sorry for him in some regards because of the abuse he suffered. But after he transitioned, my other cat, which is his half-brother, who transitioned a year before he did, came back and said, I know you always felt badly about Jack's background, but the reality is he's a very strong being. He's a strong soul, and he came to help heal. that was his role in life. And he said, now he wrote a book with you that you helped him pin, or he helped you pin, and it's out there in the world touching people right and left. George, I get so many letters written to me, emails, calls. People buy the book and then they'll read it and come back and say, I need 5 more for my friends.
Whoa.
Because it's that touching of a story. And I can't take credit for it. I can only say I put it into poetry.
Are you getting more response to the book than Ouija boards?
My Ouija board book sells really well. Put it that way. But I think what happens is people wanted to know more about how I was channeling animals.
We're going to come back in a moment with you, Karen. We're going to take phone calls next hour. Karen's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. She's also got a presence on YouTube. She spells her last name D-A-H-L-M-A-N, Karen Dahlman. And her books, of course, When Cats Had Wings.